Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Christine Williams.
And you are listening to Fiber Talk, the midweek version of that twice a week podcast for needle people.
I think we should go back to basics because I think it's getting worse as time goes on.
Yeah, and there was no enthusiasm there either. I needed to punch that up, didn't I? It's just it kind of died on the vine.
Yeah.
Well, okay.
We can do better.
Yeah, I'll work on that for the next one.
Got it.
Yes. Okay. So a fun thing that my friend Mary McGuire has done. So in the cross stitch world, we have all these smalls. Little House Needlework is one of the biggest ones, I think. Do these series of things, houses or whatever it might be, and they'll have a theme, and they'll do 8 or 10 or something, or one a month or whatever. These little, I don't know, 4x5 or 4x6 pieces that some people stitch all together to make a little town or a little whatever. Some people do them as ornaments. And Vonna Pfeiffer has several tutorials on how to do ornaments. And it's all cross-stitch stuff. Well, Mary McGuire did a cool thing. She took the latest series from Little House Needlework is Farmhouse something. It's a bunch of farmhouses. Mm-hmm. Different ones. And they're cute. You know, I give them credit. They're cute for, they're just simple little things, relatively quick stitches. What Mary did, because Mary doesn't cross-stitch, and I don't think Mary has any interest in cross-stitching, she took gray Congress cloth for this the farm series, gray Congress cloth, and used the over dyes, used the threads that are called for, 3 strands, and did a basket weave stitch of the first couple. I think she's done the first 2, if they're out, or certainly the first one. I've just seen a picture of one. But she did a basket weave stitching with 3 strands of this Little House Needlework farmhouse series. And, wow, it's spectacular.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and so it's needlework. So if you don't like making X's, you know, basket weave, and they're small enough that, you know, you get a rhythm going with basket weave, you can stitch up a storm in a hurry. And it just came out really nice, really, really attractive. And I had a little communication with her and said, hey, that was a great idea, because a picture was posted. And I said, that's a great idea. She said, yeah, it was a lot of fun. I can't wait for the next one. And so I'm intrigued. I think I might be giving that a try.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, I mean, I'm doing a lot of cross-stitching right now, but what fun. You have to lay the 3 strands, but that's not that big a deal. And you could do pearl cotton if you didn't have to have the over dyes. You could just use pearl cotton, I don't know, size 8 or something like that, whatever fills the hole properly, and do it that way. Mm-hmm. But yeah, she just got a beautiful result out of it, and you could see it immediately could be converted into a real nice ornament and look really great. So it's one of those little things that, why didn't I think of that? And So, yeah, so that's something for people to try if you're interested in these cross-stitch smalls, but you'd rather needlepoint. You know, try that. So that was a good idea.
I think that's a good point, because there's a lot of times that you'll see a design of something, especially if you go into a shop or something, I have a project I can talk about later. You'll see a design that's maybe in one medium, and you say, well, that's really nice, but I don't like doing that thing. And there's really no reason you can't translate it to something else.
Nope.
Right?
Nope. No rules.
You might have to, right. I mean, you might have to adapt it a little bit. I think going from embroidery to needlepoint or anything that's restricted by the cloth, the ground cloth itself, might be a little bit tricky, because things might get a little just rough around the edges, because that's one of the nice things with surface embroidery is that you can get really beautiful smooth edges because you have no restriction, right? You're not held into any boxes.
Right.
So that might be difficult, but going the other way would be very easy to do.
Right.
So,
yep.
Yeah, I think that's kind of a nice idea.
Yeah, just because it's charted for cross stitch doesn't mean you can't do a basket weave with needlepoint. Yep, exactly. Yeah. So she, and I have 2 or 3 of those little charts from one other series, and I may be heading to Welcome Stitchery to get a piece of canvas and just use some stash, you know, just use some thread that I have in the stash, and because I just never thought of doing it. But she really got a beautiful job. Of course, Mary stitched it, so of course it's a beautiful job. But it just really is very nice, very attractive. So there's an idea, an idea. And then
I
talked a couple times. I've talked about where I made a mistake and had a thread finished off and then accidentally pulled it out or whatever, and you had this short little stub that you still wanted to get back in because I didn't want to pull out the stitches. So, you know, the trick that I've used for getting those little stubs back in and weaving them under in the back is to put a needle in and then put the needle threader through the needle, put the needle in where you want the thread to go, and then put a needle threader through the eye of the needle, which is already in the back of the stitching, and then pull your thread through, the little stub of thread, pull it through, and then pull your needle through, and you have it anchored. And I've done that, and it takes a little fiddling, but it works. Well, I tripped over a much better idea the other day. Sarah Homfray, Homfray, Sarah Homfray Embroidery. And she has, look her up on YouTube, and she has a whole series of different kinds of instructional stitching things, but it's embroidery based for the most part, but lots of stitches and things. Well, she had a video that was how to deal with loops. So you get a knot in the back of your thing, you don't notice it, you get all the way to the other side, and there's that loop. And then how to deal with it, because you really need to do something with those. Stitch them down or do something. So I thought, well, this will be interesting to learn. What she does is she cuts that loop and makes two stubs.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, okay, that's fine. Now, how are you going to bury those stubs in the back of the needlework? And I'm thinking, well, I can do it my way with, you know, put the needle in, use the threader, pull it through, and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I'm sure veterans know this trick, but I'd never seen it before. What she did was she took heavy sewing thread or linen thread, and she just took a length, and she put the two ends through the eye of a needle. So she had a loop, okay? And then she puts the needle in where she wants it to go in the stitching in the back. And so you have this needle that's pulled through and there's this loop. And then she just simply puts the stub that she wants to bury inside that loop. It's a lasso method, she calls it.
Yeah.
And hangs onto it and pulls it through. And by golly, that works slicker than all get out. It just pulled the...
Drags it through all the way.
Drags it all the way through, and out comes the other end, and the lasso slips off the end, and your thread is anchored.
That is pretty brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah, I was applauding that one. Watched it a couple times just because I was amazed. But, yeah, so there's a nice little trick. Now, fortunately, I haven't had one of those situations recently, but, yeah, I'll be trying that out. It was just a good little trick. I had not seen that one. So, and a whole lot easier than my method, which takes a little fiddling. So, yeah.
They're actually not that different. I think yours is just, it goes a little maybe slower because you're going, you know, bit by bit instead of all at once.
Right, right.
But the gist of it is the same. You're using a loop of something to catch the end of the thread and then carry it through.
Right. But this is just really slick and fast, and especially if you have those knots and a loop in the back, that you know, just pull both those through. Problem solved. End of problem. Yep. So it's Sarah Homfray, Homfray Embroidery, and I'll put a link on the page for this podcast to that particular video that she did. But it's just really slick, and then watch some of her other ones because there's some really good tips in there. So yeah, bravo. That was fun. That's the only thing I have from my projects, unless people want to hear about my never-ending stitching of the same sampler, which I don't think people want to hear about.
What are you, see, that's the problem with these big samplers is that we get stuck on them and then we don't talk about any other things.
Right. Well, I'm about to go back to some needle pointing. So one more section and then I'm going back to needle pointing because I want to look at something other than 40 count linen and one strand silk over two. So we're headed back. I missed the needle point, so I'm going back. But I have to say that I've kind of fallen, you know, that phrase is getting really old these days, you know, down the rabbit hole of samplers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say addicted, but I really become intrigued by these things. And I'm really enjoying doing this sampler, but it's time to move on to making some other kind of stitches. But really, really enjoying this and anxious to get to one of my hands across the sea samplers.
Yes.
Because, yeah, wow. And then, this is a flat-out plug for Nicola and Hands Across the Sea. Nicola, after the last week we talked about it, or a week before, anyway, shows up in the mail for review, five review copies of her five new samplers.
Oh.
So she sent me to review and talk about, because why not? So I have sitting in front of me all five of the samplers that she's introducing at the Nashville show. And that people who want samplers should be ordering from their local shops pronto, so that they get shipped to you. Because I think Sassy Jacks is going to have them and ship them out so that you receive them the first day of the Nashville show. I think that's what I read on Sassy Jack's site. And I've read a couple others that they're going to make sure that you have your samplers in hand, whatever, not samplers, but whatever you order in hand when the show is on. So if you order cross stitch or whatever it is that you order. But I'm pretty sure Sassy Jack's that she said that she would have, if you ordered any of these Hands Across the Sea samplers, that she would be able to mail to have them and be able to mail them so you had them the first day of the show. Because you can't, you know, the whole purpose of the show is for shop owners to go and buy stuff for their customers. So you can't buy this stuff ahead of time. But I have these review copies. They're so cool.
Yeah. All right. So are you kitting them up yet?
No, I just drool. I just drool. So we have, okay, so we have Amy Kahn, C-A-N-N, 1831, is one. And this one is, let's see, if you do 40 count, it's 13.8 by 15.35 inches. These are all good sized things. And she has kind of a play, like a park playground thing in the center. Lots of little animals and stuff, and a really nice border. And there's no alphabet on this one. But, so that's, it's more of a square one. But, and there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 15 colors. Yeah, 15 colors in this one. So Amy Kahn. And I'm thinking about doing a video so people can see these things. Nicola's been posting pictures everywhere, but thinking about doing a video, and I don't know if I will. And then Sarah Dawes, circa 1840. They can't find Sarah Dawes, the specific Sarah Dawes, name apparently common enough that couldn't do it.
Yeah.
But this one has a little verse in the middle, to my ever-honored parents, and a verse that goes with that. And then it's a border, a beautiful border of flowers, and then some other flowers around this verse, and then a bird of some kind in the bottom with two ladies on the side. And this is more of a vertical one. More, very, very vertical, 14.7 by 26.15 inches.
I really like those. Yeah.
On 40 count. And really colorful, really beautiful piece. And then... there's two with a lot of colors. Eliza Bell Cox, 1832. And this one has, she was at the Radcliffe House, this Eliza. and it has a little verse, and it has a beautiful frame of flowers, just just flowers all the way around with a couple butterflies, and then a like a parrot kind of bird in the middle sitting on a tree that's beautiful. And there's a lot of colors in this thing. One of the cool things with this one, Eliza Bell Cox, that Nicola did, is comes with a card that's probably 2 by 6, 7 inches long. It's a separate card that shows all the symbols and the Soie d'Alger and DMC colors on a separate card.
That is key.
Yes, because when Nicola does these charts, I think every other page in these, she puts the color legends, so you're not always flipping back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
Well, with these, where there's a ton of colors, you get a separate card so that you can have that right in front of you while you're stitching.
Yeah, you could just magnet that right to your cloth.
Right, exactly. And the card is punched at the top, and there's a little cord with a tassel in the punch. So you have this little cord with a tassel. Yes, you can use a magnet, or you can hang it off your frame, or any number of things. But just brilliant. Brilliant little convenience thing. And then on the back is how to do a cross stitch over one and over two, and how to do a satin stitch for this one. So
that's really nice.
Yeah.
That's a clever idea to do when you're starting any project, is to just, you know, copy down the legend like that and hang it on the side of your piece. That's a great idea.
Yeah. And of course, all of her charts are in color. So on this card, then, is all, you know, the symbol and the color, and then the either DMC or the silk thing. But really great. And then Hannah Gaskell, 1823, is another one that has this card. The card comes with it because there are a lot of colors. And I'm 40 count. Oh, this is a beast. 23.9 by 25.85 inches on 40 count is the stitched area.
Yeah.
This is monstrous. And I remember Nicola talking about when she was on a couple weeks ago. This is the one, Hannah Gaskell, with the double crucifix on it, on either side of must be a Bible verse of some kind. But she said that was unusual. But another beautiful one. And a good size one. Hannah was 10, I think. You know, doing something that big with 10 years old. Yeah. And of course, with all these, she has the story, as much as she was able to put together the story about the girl and the times that she lived in mm-hmm. the front. So a collector thing. And then the one, this is the one you asked, which one am I going to stitch? This is the one I'm going to stitch. Sarah Mary Larkworthy. That's going to be the first one I'll stitch. Sarah Mary Larkworthy, 1727, ancient. And not too many colors in this. There's only 5 colors.
Okay.
And the design is 12 by 17 at 40 count, on a 40 count fabric. But it's really dense. It's really dense stitching, alphabet at the top, and a nice band, and then flowers and things around, and the Lord's Prayer is in the middle, and then alphabet on the bottom. So that's why I'm going to stitch it, because I showed it to Margaret. I said, you know, the Lord's Prayer here, and she said, oh, it's going right up here on this wall, right over here. So because she has a crucifix and a couple of other things hanging on a wall, kind of a religious little arrangement. She said, well, that's where that's going. So Sarah Mary Larkworthy, and it's really, really beautiful. And there you have to do some freehand stitching. It doesn't look at all tough. She says this one is for intermediate and advanced stitchers. But if you're, you know, even if you're a beginner and fairly determined, this would not be tough. And as I recall, she'll have a video with this one to show you how to stitch these satin stitch flowers, and there's some freehand to it. But Sarah Mary Larkworthy, that's the one that stands out of the 5 for me. So, yeah. Beautiful stuff.
Cool.
Yep.
And a wide variety there, too.
Oh, yeah, very much so, yeah. Which is why I was excited when I saw them, because, yeah, there's no two even close to the same. And yeah, so that's pretty neat. But you got order them ahead of time. Go to your store and tell them I want this, and then you know, they'll bring them home, because that's the purpose of this market, is that the shop owners go there with cash in hand and buy stuff and bring it home, so you can go to the store the day after they get home and pick mm-hmm. it up, pick your order up. And I've done that. Monica has brought home stuff for me from those shows. And it's pretty neat, because you get the latest thing right away. And then, like, if Sassy Jack's, I keep using that as an example, but if you order and she's going to send it right to you, then you'll have it the first day that it's available. So that's pretty neat. And then, let's see. Oh, and then so I started poking around, and Merry Wind Farm, was trying to find, all right, who else is introducing stuff and what have they shown? Merry Wind Farm, Melinda Cole is the designer. She has two samplers. One is a reproduction, Ellen Spedding, 1831, that I thought was quite attractive. And then she had another one that looked like it was an original called Girls in Blue Dresses, which Girls in Blue Dresses, that didn't appeal to me as a thing to stitch, but I'm sure for mm-hmm. others it would. And then I sent you pictures. Karen Kluba from Rosewood Manor, she'll be our guest in a couple of weeks. She has a new sampler. She did a sunrise sampler that I had not seen. I like her designs. I think they're beautiful.
Yeah.
But the sunrise sampler that she did last year, well, now this year at Nashville, she's going to have the sunset sampler. And I sent you pictures of those. Are those colorful mm-hmm. and beautiful yeah. or what?
They are.
Yeah.
I think they're aptly named, too, because just the array of colors that are chosen for those are really, really pretty.
Yeah, you won't get bored stitching those. No. No. And they're dense, too. There's a lot of stitching in them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, really beautiful. And she just has a real nice design eye, Karen Kluba. I'm anxious to talk to her. But, yeah, so you can see that, that kind of a thing, sunrise and sunset, pair of samplers hanging on a wall. That would be really nice. Nice colors. So that's all I found in about a half hour of searching. Of what people have. So, yeah, that show, we'll be there doing videos and doing shows from it.
And, you will.
So you'll get to see the latest stuff as much as we can show to you. And, yeah, we'll get to meet some of these designers and line them up to do shows with us coming up. So yes. Yay.
I'm really just excited to see all the new things.
Yes.
You know, I mean, just yes. the same as everybody else. I mean, it's just going to be drool worthy and maybe leaving credit cards at home sort of thing. Because otherwise, you know, that could be problematic.
Yeah, that's the discipline you want to use. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just leave the cards elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yep. So that was, yeah, so those, you know, just a little taste of what's coming up. And then one more sampler thing, and then I'm going to drop the sampler thing. If on Facebook, and this doesn't have to do with samplers, on Facebook, there's a group called Our Sampler Years, Yesterday's Needlework for Today. And I think this is the one that Nicholas started. I'm pretty sure it is. So it's Our Sampler Years, Yesterday's Needlework for Today. And, you know, obviously it's all samplers, but this, each weekend they have some theme, and you post, like, if you, samplers that have hearts in them, or samplers that have a dog in it, or, you know, whatever it might be. Well, this mm-hmm. past weekend, the theme was to show your stitching area.
Oh, which uh-huh. is your favorite thing.
Uh-huh. And so if you're at all interested in seeing some impressive, I mean, rooms, a lot of them were just rooms, an entire bedroom or whatever. There's a ton of them. A lot of people posted. So if you want to see how people are storing their stuff and what their stitching areas are like and how they handle, you know, stash upon stash, join that, Our Sampler Years, Yesterday's Needlework, because there's a ton of them. And people, a lot of people, you know, 4, 5, 6 pictures, so you get a tour around the room. And, mm-hmm. Boy, there's a lot of people that have some very nice stitching caves, I think you could easily call them. Yeah,
it was... I have to look back at, there's a couple of, I want to say it was Vanna, but I'm not sure. I'm getting to the point where my thread stash is overwhelming the place that it is. And I think I need to do something a little bit larger, and I'd like something that's scalable, because that's what I'm you know, this is what you do. Okay, I have this cabinet, I'll put things in it, and then it's some one of a kind cabinet that you happen to have, and then when you run out of space in it, now you have to have some other cabinet, and now you have 17 different types of places that you're storing things, and none of it is orderly. And that really bothers me, because I kind of want like all the threads in the same kind of drawer. That's just it's like the old lab part of me. It just needs to have things ordered that way. So I remember somebody had done something with file drawers and hanging the threads off of the tops of the hanging files. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was Vanna. She took the hanging files and cut them off and left like an inch or so, and then punched holes in them.
Yeah, something like that.
Maybe it wasn't Vanna. I'm not sure it was Vanna, but anyway, yes. And then just hang those in the file drawers, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm going to have to look at those, because that's something that, you know, you can put in any kind of cabinet. The only thing that bothers me, or that, and you can maybe tell me differently. Right now I have all my threads in little plastic bags, right? So if I go into something like that, is there going to be an issue with keeping things clean, because they're not in their own individual little homes?
Well, I keep...
I don't think so.
No, other than my DMC floss, I keep most things, pearl cotton and stuff. If I've broken the skein, then it goes in a floss away bag.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so I just put the tag in the bag with it. I don't write on the bags, because then I can reuse the bags for other ones. But, I put them in there. Those are Ziploc, and I've been leaving that Ziploc partially open so air can go in and out. I don't know if that matters or not.
Okay.
You know, because confined in plasticizers, I don't know. But I've been leaving it open just a little bit. I'm not sure a whole lot of air goes in and out, but I've been doing that. And that's a question. I've got a person from the Minneapolis Historical Conservatory or something like that, a person that will have, it's going to be a few weeks before she can do it, she's a textile conservator there.
Perfect.
And
that will be the person we need.
Right. And so she's going to be on in a few weeks. I already just communicated with her the other day. And we're going to be able to ask those kinds of questions about storage and, you know, what's long term, what doesn't matter. Like, is a plastic bag for 2 years okay, but 20 years not, you know, that kind of thing. And so I'm anxious to talk to her, because, yes, those questions come to me all the time.
Yeah.
So
I'll tell you my thread. This is my thread storage right now. So anything that's weird, like the Krynex that are on rolls or pearl cottons that are on skeins like that, those are kind of, I haven't figured out a good way to do those, because I don't have enough of them to make a system. But the anything that's floss like that, so the Soie d'Alger or any of the silks that are like that, or DMCs that you just end up with 8 million of them. What I ended up doing, I must have been sick one day. I think that's how this happened. That or I was driving myself crazy. I happened to have a surplus of snack-sized Ziploc bags. So not the sandwich size, but what's the half size of that?
Okay. Yeah. Yep.
Right?
Yep.
So what I did was I didn't write on the bags, but I had also... index cards. So on the top of each card, it says what the fiber is, cotton, silk, or other, and then it gives the manufacturer and the number. So, and then I organized them back into the box that the plastic bags came from. So I tore off the top of the box so that now it's just an open top box. And so each one is in its own Ziploc bag, and the index cards, the 3x5 index cards, fit in them perfectly. So it also gives it a little bit of structure. And then I organize them by number order. So the good thing is, if you have a chart and you know the numbers, you can find them really easily. The negative of doing it this way is that if you are doing it the opposite way and you're thinking, oh, I'd like to see, you know, I need a red.
Yeah,
you kind of have to pull them all out a little bit to see what you've got. They're not all arrayed like that,
right.
like they would be if they were in clear plastic or if they were not in plastic at all. So for now, this is working out okay. But when it grows to a larger number, it's going to be, I think, more difficult. And so, and that's where I think I get to the point of, do you organize your threads by color or by number? Right.
Yeah. That's a good question. Yeah. And I think you,
can, I think it's,
yeah,
you could make an argument either way.
Yeah. Get a room full of people and you'd have them split down the middle in a hurry. Yeah.
I think it depends on what you do. Right. So if you're more a chart stitcher, then it makes sense to do them by numbers because that's what you're going to be mostly doing. You get your chart, you look down the numbers, you look at what you have, and then whatever you don't have, you go out and get. If you are not a chart stitcher, so if you're doing a painted canvas or if you're doing surface embroidery where you're choosing your colors, then it would seem to me, now that I've done it the opposite way, to organize them by color, because then you can... you can sort of go through and, you know, you have your red section and you can sort of pull the right one out
right.
and you won't miss, you know, oh, I had the perfect red and I didn't see it because it was buried in, because the numbers and the colors don't correspond in any meaningful way.
Right.
So. Yeah.
Yes.
So that's where we are now.
Yeah. And I know what you mean about, you start a storage system and you want the same kind of container, and then it and then it fills up, and then now what? And because see, I'm my threads are all in these two very, I'm sure they were given to me, but I'm sure they're very expensive tool chest boxes.
Mm-hmm.
And so I took, they're all metal, and so I took acid free paper and lined the bottoms of each of the drawers and put my thread in. Well, I'm just about full of both cabinets, both the tool chests.
Right.
And so I'm at that point that you just described where, okay, now I'd like to have a third one that matches it, but I'm afraid to look at how much it would cost me if I could even get it. And,
right.
And then,
and if you're going into furniture or something like that, so I think office supplies, that's a really smart idea because they're pretty uniform.
Right.
And, you know, you can translate that from one thing to another. That does make sense.
Yes. Because in that weekend of stitching room things, there's a lot of variety, and you see that problem happening over and over. A lot of the women have antique furniture that you could tell they picked up at a thrift store or whatever and cleaned up and finished up and use that, and nothing matches, but it, like, it's all wood, so it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
And they get away with it that way. And then there's, of course, lots of stacks and stacks of Sterlite totes and those kinds of things.
Yes, right.
Yeah, there's a million ways to do it, but I know what you mean. Yeah, you start with one system and you like to keep it, but then over time you lose the opportunity or the ability to keep that system.
Yeah, I appreciate the mismatched antique furniture approach.
Yeah.
And I also know that will drive me bad. I won't be able to do that because I will go crazy just because it will, I can't do it. but you're right, that to do the Sterilite things, after a while, do you really want to be stitching in a room surrounded by plastic, you know, storage containers? No, that's not very elegant either.
Right.
So, at one point, so I'll tell you, so one of my crazy ideas was, a card catalog from a library.
Oh.
And in my head, right? So in my head, well, there must be card catalogs everywhere, and they're probably really cheap because nobody wants them anymore. And they're the perfect size for this exact, you know, size of plastic bag. And you could just line up threads and you could do, I mean, you would not run out of room if you got a reasonable sized one. And then you could put your pearl cottons and all of your other ones in a different drawer. And, you know, that would be probably the best thread container ever.
Okay, here comes the butt. Here comes the butt.
Yeah, yeah. So I was like, oh, this is the best. I know exactly what I'm going to do. So then I looked on eBay to see what a card catalog, you know, and I'm thinking I could pick one up for like $100 somewhere and it's going to be great.
Sure.
Yeah, no. They were many, many hundreds of dollars.
No.
Yeah. Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Evidently, somebody went around and destroyed every card catalog because now they're really hard to find.
Oh.
Surprising, right?
Yeah. Because, yeah, you know, libraries, take this thing out of here. I don't want it anymore. Yeah.
Exactly. But I'm convinced in my head this is the best thread storage method. So I'm not going to stop. I'm going to keep looking because if I can get one, because A, it's really cool because it's a card catalog. That's
right.
Pretty awesome.
Right.
Just the smell of it. Can you remember? You remember the smell of it, right?
Oh, sure. Yeah. It's got all the character you want. Yeah.
Everyone that's listening, right? Take a moment because you know exactly what that smells like.
Yep.
From opening those long drawers when you were a kid. So I still think that's the coolest idea. So I'm just going to have to keep looking and see if I can find one in a vintage store. We just don't have those kind of stores in New York and Long Island.
Yeah.
So if I'm traveling somewhere, I'm going to keep my eyes peeled or on eBay. Even if I get one in terrible shape and I have to fix it up. You can get the little clips that go on the front. You know, the ones that you slip the little card in that says which drawer that you can get, but the actual piece of furniture I found very difficult to find.
And those things are built like tanks too.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Oh, I thought you were going to say you picked up three of them like without even trying.
No.
Oh.
No, but I'm on a mission now because that's what it is. Because then fabrics and things like that, there's lots of different ways to approach that.
Right.
But the threads, because they're small, there has to be a way. And, you know, I have things from IKEA that have lots of little drawers in them and stuff. But then they're never the same from year to year. And that would drive me crazy. So I need this. I don't know what it is because I'm not usually this, rigid when it comes to things like this. I think it's a lab thing. Like when I'm working on stuff, it has to be organized in a particular way. So yeah, that's my mission. Card catalog.
Now, see, I relate to you. That I know exactly what you mean. Cause I mean, I'm the last guy to be any kind of a clothes horse. So when I find shirts or pants or socks that I like, you know, and then I'll buy whatever. And then when they wear out, I have every expectation of going back and just replacing them. And
no, it doesn't work that way.
It doesn't work that way at all. And it frustrates me to no end because it's like I got to start all over and I don't want to start all over. And I know exactly what you mean. And Sterlite changed their tote design, you know, from year to year. Well, I want them all to match. And you shouldn't have to buy 50 at once to have them match.
No.
Yeah.
But you should do that with socks. I'm just saying.
Okay. Good tip.
And t-shirts.
Good tip.
That's all. So, and I will also say, so you will look, so, and everybody's got their weird things, right? So like, my closet I wouldn't use the word orderly at all. It has some semblance of a system, but it's no system that would be recognizable to anybody but me. But in my kitchen cabinets, all of the jars have to be facing forward.
Mm-hmm.
And they're sorted to a degree. There's, you know, there's certain areas that are set for certain things, but the labels have to be facing forward because otherwise that bothers me.
Yes.
But then my clothing is just a, you know, nobody would be able to make sense. My partner's closet. So now I have a tiny little closet and it's functional and that's all I need. He has a walk-in closet because he having been in the military, and that should tell you everything you need to know.
Got it.
I have been instructed on how to fold things because they have to be folded a particular way.
Mm-hmm.
Because back in the military, everything had to be 4x6. So I now know how to do those. And, you know, basically he just looks at me and says, just don't, just leave it. But so, okay, so small, right, so small personal story. So he was a truck driver for the New York Times for 16 years and then became a school teacher. So school teachers now generally dress fairly casually, but he dresses in a suit 2 days a week, and then a sport jacket, and then like a nice sweater the rest of the week. So he's
still
he's
today? In, really?
Yeah, absolutely. A three-piece suit every Monday. And whoa, at least a two-piece suit on Tuesdays and a sport coat on Wednesdays and a shirt and a vest usually on Thursdays and then maybe a sweater on. No, he dresses well. And the reason I asked him, well, many people have asked him, he said, you know, because I worked for the Times for 16 years driving a truck. And you're driving a truck and you're lugging around filthy newspaper. So for 16 years, I was never clean. Like my clothing was disgusting. Everything yeah. was ripped. I didn't own anything nice because everything that I wore for work was just gross. And he said, when I started teaching, I wanted to dress nicely. I wanted to dress up to the job that I had. So he just got into this habit of wearing a suit. And so he's the only teacher that wears a tie 4 days a week. So, wow. Right. But this person, his shirts are hanging. They all face the same direction. And they are organized by color in the closet.
Of course they are.
Of course they are. Which when we met, was one of those things that I looked at and said, I don't know if this is the point where I should run away. Because A, what does it tell me about you? And B, what does it tell me about how you're going to be able to tolerate me?
Yeah. There's a double side to that, isn't there?
Yeah, because that's not happening in my house. You know, like I said, there's some system going on that makes sense to me, but to no one else. So yeah, you look in that closet and it's frightening to me.
Wow.
I think the military gets into people's blood and then you can't undo it. Cause I have other coworkers who were ex-military and they've told me men that they won't let their wives do their laundry because they can't do it right.
Oh, wow.
Which, you know, I'm not complaining about.
Yeah. Yeah. You take that as a victory. Yeah.
Right. I'm not good enough to do your laundry. Oh, I'm so sorry.
Darn.
I'm really heartbroken about that. Yeah. So, yeah. So, but all of those things aside, my threads, for some reason, have to be orderly. So I'm on a mission.
Okay. So everybody start looking for card file drawers from libraries for Christine that don't cost a fortune.
That's right. I'm going to find one. Okay. And then my problems will be solved because every card catalog drawer is always the same. So even if you got another card catalog,
right,
even if it was slightly different, it would still have those standard drawers in it. So
right. Exactly. Yes. Okay. All right. That's the mission for all listeners. Find Christine card catalog. You'll have 50 before Friday.
Yeah, but they'll all be $7,000, yeah, so no it won't kidding. Matter. Yep. Anyway, so that's what my thing is. So that's where we're looking at.
Okay. All right.
So cool. We'll have to look at the Facebook page. That's a good idea.
Yep. Got to wrap up, but I got one more. I got to get a plug in here before we go. Laura Herman writing to me. She does the PR job for the Shoreline Stitchers Showcase. And you'll remember that the Shoreline Stitchers, that's Needle Artists by the Sea. And that Laureen Salt's Autumn Kaleidoscope is their year-long project. Mm-hmm. Remember that? Yeah. Yeah, I drool over that. So the Shoreline Stitchers Showcase is taking place in Southern California in April. And sponsored by the Needle Artists by the Sea group, the American Needlepoint Guild group. This year will be the seventh time they've had the biennial showcase. That's what, every 2 years, right? Yes.
Yeah.
And they usually receive almost 300 entries.
Wow.
And so you can, it's Laura Herman, HERRMANN, PM her, or go to the Needle Artists by the Sea site, and then you can get the information there. And it's needleartistsbythesea.org, artists with an S, needleartistsbythesea.org, and you can want to send in and be one of the 300 plus, you can do that. But wow, 300 people submitting. That's impressive.
That is.
Yes. So there you have it. Shoreline Stitcher Showcase, Needle Artist by the Sea, needleartistbythesea.org. The thing's in April, so act quickly if you want to get in on the deal. And speaking of, be sure and check out the video I did at the Sign of the Arrow in St. Louis. That was fun. That's a great shop with a great story. So be sure and do that. And then Sunday, anxious for people to hear this, Terry Bay of Terry Bay Needlework Designs is our guest on Sunday. And we just recorded that last night. White work, hardanger, black work.
Mm.
And there are points in the show where it would really be wonderful if it was video. So go to Terry Bay Needleworkdesigns.com to see some of her work. I still am amazed at some of the stuff she's doing and the designs. And it was just great talking to her. And she's making veils for her daughter's wedding.
Oh, my God. They are ridiculous.
It was Romanian something lace.
Right.
Where she crochets cord. And then she drapes it over. She's got a cloth, a base cloth with the pattern on it, draped over a head shape. And then she does these cords and pieces and places them and connects them. And then she's going to needle lace them all together. And holy smokes. Impressive, impressive work. So something really different. Yeah, really different. And I went looking today for Romanian. There's a word and then it's lace. And I forget what it
is. Yes.
And boy, some of the stuff you can see why. Because when you look at the pictures on her blog, you go, what's that? You know, that's not happening. Who would want that anywhere near their head? Then you see what the final product is and you go, yeah, everybody would want it. Everybody.
Yeah. They're going to be spectacular.
Yep. Really talented lady there. So that's Sunday, Terry Bay Needlework Designs. Check her out because it's impressive stuff. We got to quit.
We do.
All right. We'll be back Sunday with Terry Bay. Thanks for listening.
Take care.